Towards the end of the year, she laid down her brush to say a special goodbye to her friend Inez, who worked beside her. It was her colleague's last day on the job before a very special event. On Wednesday, 20th of October, 1926, Inez Corcoran married Vincent Lloyd Valla. Together, the happy couple stood at the altar and made their solemn vows. Vows that would see them through their future, through every dream, every day, every delightful thing to come. Their voices echoed lightly round the cool church walls. Until death do us part. Chapter 24. Orange, New Jersey, 1927. Grace Fryer limped into Dr. Humphreys' office, trying not to cry out with pain. Humphreys was shocked at the change in Grace. He hadn't treated her for some time. She had been sent to him by Dr. Martland, who said she was in rather a serious condition on account of her spine. Dr. Martland and Dr. Hoffman had both tried to help her, Grace mused, as Humphreys ushered her straight to radiology for a new X-ray. Hoffman in particular, she thought, had been very kind. Seeing a sharp deterioration in her health, he had written to President Rhoda on her behalf to appeal to him to help Grace in a spirit of fairness and justice. Hoffman was surprised by USRC's response. Mr. Rhoda is no longer connected with this corporation. It seems the firm hadn't appreciated being put in the position of having to settle lawsuits. Rhoda's fingerprints were all over the company's questionable handling of the Drinker report, and perhaps it was felt it was best all round if he moved on to pastures new. He had resigned in July 1926. While no longer the public face of the company, he remained a director on the board. Despite the change at the top, the company's attitude to its stricken former employees hadn't changed one bit. The incoming president, Clarence B. Lee, immediately declined Hoffman's appeal for assistance. When Hoffman wrote to Grace to let her know, he added, "You must take legal action at once." Well, thought Grace, she was trying. Despite her poor health, she had not stopped looking for a lawyer and was even now waiting to hear back from a firm the bank had passed her on to. In the meantime, she had come to see Humphreys to find out what was wrong with her back. It is difficult to imagine how she might have reacted to the news he had to share. X-rays taken at that time, Humphreys later said, showed a crushing of the vertebrae. Grace's very spine had been shattered by the radium. In her foot, meanwhile, there was destruction of the entire affected bone through crushing and thinning. It must have been agonizing to endure. Radium eats the bone, Grace later said, as steadily and surely as fire burns wood. Humphreys could do nothing but try to find ways to make life more comfortable for her, ways to help her live her life. And so, on 29th of January 1927, he fitted Grace Fryer, then 27, with a solid steel back brace. It extended from her shoulders to her waist and was held in place by two crossbars of steel. She had to wear it every single day and was permitted to take it off for only 2 minutes at a time. It was a demanding schedule of treatment, but she had no choice but to follow her doctor's orders. She later confided, "I can hardly stand up without it."